On the 20th of April in 2016, my next guest had her life changed forever. Her brother, Alistair, was murdered on his way home from work in Johannesburg, South Africa. While there have been different lines of investigation, no one has ever been charged. Moira Lawson has travelled to Johannesburg to find out more, but has been left with many unanswered questions. And she joins us in studio now, along with John O'Keefe of ADVIC, a charity to support families bereaved by homicide. You're both very welcome to Global Village. And Moira, I'm so sorry that you have to come on Global Village on such sad circumstances. But take us back to that day. Where were you when you heard the news?
I was at work. I was working on a production for Croke Park. And in the afternoon, my sister had phoned me from Australia because they couldn't get hold of me from South Africa. So it was a shock. I mean, she automatically said something's happened. I presumed maybe it was a heart attack or that, because my mother had passed from a heart attack when she was quite young. But she then mentioned, she said, no, that he was shot. And I think at that moment, it was sort of like all our worst nightmares, you know, being from South Africa, knowing what the country's like. And someone took me into a room so I could continue my conversation and, you know, talk to my sister and that. And it was just, it's that thing that everybody, you know, you hear everybody talk about, that your life literally feels like it's just ended. You know, I felt like I was this concrete block, and someone had a sledgehammer and just smacked me in the middle of my chest, and it had just shattered. And all I could think about was, I was so glad my mom and dad were already gone, because I don't think they would have lived through it. So it was all very surreal, I think. But I went into that mode of, he has a daughter of 25 over there, and my instant reaction was, you know, how's she dealing with things? Because they were extremely close. I mean, he pretty much brought her up. You know, he was divorced. She did see her mother a lot as well, but they had a very close relationship. So, and I had to work. We had this big, you know, function that had to be finished on the Saturday. So I had to get through those 4 days, and then I could fly to Johannesburg. So, yeah, just a bit of a whirlwind, you know.
As a fellow migrant, that is the call that I think all migrants dread, because you know it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, there's loved ones that you left behind, and one day you're going to get a call to say, and actually even thinking about it, you know, it's so emotional, because you can't avoid it, you know. But how different is it to hear, you know, someone passing away with some terminal illness or because of age? But this is horrendous. It's so traumatic to hear that this person died through homicide. Somebody actually intentionally wanted to kill your brother. It's horrendous.
I mean, it's that thing of, you think it's never going to happen to you, but it, you know, it can. I think, you know, both my parents have passed. A year and a half before Alistair was murdered, I lost a very close friend to suicide. And I mean, I thought my mother passing and Andrea's passing were going to absolutely wipe me out. I didn't think anything could get harder than those. This is just another level. Like, you can't explain to someone who hasn't been through it exactly what it's like. I'm forever changed. I will never be that same person I was that day or before that. I will not ever be the same Moira again. It is life changing, and people always go, it'll get easier. It'll get better. And a lot of the time I wanted to just punch people, you know, because there was a lot of anger afterwards, a huge amount. And I just wanted to say, look, you know, get lost. You've got no idea what this is like. And I felt selfish a lot of the time. You know, there's a lot of guilt that goes with it because of how you feel and how your emotions change. But it's impossible to explain it to anyone. So I kind of try to give up doing that.
Because there's a huge injustice. Yeah. And where are we in relation to the investigation? Is there anything that has come out that has made this whole thing make some kind of sense?
Or
it's complete and utter question mark in your life?
I mean, it gets worse. And, you know, John will know this. I mean, John's my liaison officer for the police. I got into such a bad habit of phoning the police maybe 3 times a week. I was obsessed with trying to get some information because we'd never had a phone call from the police. We never had any contact with the police. I was given the detective's name. And so I would phone and I would try find out. And I just became obsessed. And it was just putting me in more of a depression and that. John stepped in and has been the one that's been, you know, contacting them, talking to them. He knows how they deal with things and that. And John's the one that's filtered everything back to me. And we've had discussions. I've gone through, you know, there's certain things in Alistair's life that, you know, his property, people were trying to get him to sell his property for the last maybe 20 years, a developer, excuse me. And all of a sudden, everything has been bought around that, but his property. And, you know, I said to John, is it worth going to the police and discussing things like that? There were a lot of other issues. Like, unfortunately, along with death, you know, you have family rifts and things like that. But there were a lot of other issues surrounding certain people in South Africa that became very hard. There was a lot of anger from all of us. You know, I wasn't blameless in that. And you tend to cut people out of your lives and blame people for things. Every angle we had told the police about. But John had been told certain things. I had been told certain things. And one of the biggest things, I think, was they discussed it with me and they said he was shot once. It was an assassination. Someone was waiting for him. But yet, last week, Monday, I had phoned the detective and I said to him, I don't even have a case file for him. I don't have a death certificate. We as a family have nothing. And he said he'd send me a docket. And on the Monday afternoon, he emailed me He emailed me his entire case with photographs and found out that he was shot 3 times.
Do you want to take a moment, Moira, and maybe we'll get John?
Yeah, you can go to John.
Yeah, this is very fresh because, I mean, it's just little over a year. Yeah. And for you to get this information is shocking.
Maybe
John,
if I can just come in there on that particular point. My day job is I'm spokesperson for the Garda Representative Association. So I know a bit about the police in Ireland and in common law jurisdictions. But I think we have to understand investigations in Ireland comparative to investigations in South Africa. They're not in the halfway place. Now, this particular detective is a pleasant guy when you can get him, but he's working in a place and in a system where life is valueless. And I mean valueless. In other words, Johannesburg will typically have as many deaths per day as we might have burglaries. I mean, it's inexplicable. So we're dealing with a very different situation. But I mean, to get back to Moira's case, I mean, Moira's case is layered upon layered. We deal with families, just to tell you a bit about ADVIC maybe.
Please,
ADVIC,
yes.
Was founded in 2005 by a number of families, 4 families mainly. And they came together because they felt the system wasn't giving them any justice, I suppose, really, in terms of their loved ones on a number of levels, in terms of counselling, in terms of legal representation, and in terms of how the criminal justice system in Ireland treated those who had committed homicide. And I might speak to that maybe shortly. And so it was set up. And primarily the work we do is one of counselling. It's one of liaison. It's also administration, the small things, the little things that family have to deal with after deaths. But I mean, you know, it's cliche time, but here we go. French philosopher Paul Ricoeur, you know, to be forgotten is to die twice. But for people like Moira, I would say almost there's another layer on top of. In fact, there's 2 layers with Moira. One, she's outside the jurisdiction. And secondly, the criminal justice system in South Africa, not unlike our own, really isn't terribly sure where it's at. In other words, it doesn't know if it's victim-centred, it doesn't know if it's offender-centred, and as a result, it falls in the middle and does a grave disservice to both. ADVIC is about victims. It is about bringing back that balance again in justice, but not such a balance that forgets about the offender. Moira, I know she may not feel like it now, but even I've spoken to her about this before. It's not all about bashing offenders. It's not great if somebody murders your brother. Let's get this straight. But it's about getting a balance back in the system where the victim's life is worth equally that of the offender's rights. Now, that's the problem. Is the minute you say that, you get put in a sort of a conservative bracket. It's nothing of the sort. But unfortunately, that's the impression. So to say victims need their rights in Ireland and indeed South Africa, it seems to imply that offenders shouldn't get theirs. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So let's talk about Ireland here. Because Moira, I mean, you have experienced, just by hearing you speak, it really sounds like the trauma is still very present. And that's because of the fact that the police in Johannesburg have just not been helpful at all. But in Ireland, how are the loved ones of, say, someone who has died through homicide, do they... Are they supported better? Are they kept in the loop?
Oh, certainly as regards the An Garda Síochána, that service has improved tenfold over the last number of years. An Garda liaison officers are there for that very specific purpose. And increasingly I hear great stories about the Gardaí as opposed to the other side. The problem, if I might suggest, and that's just not because I happen to work for their organisation, but the problem doesn't lie for families with the An Garda Síochána. The problem lies with the criminal justice system. So very briefly, just to remind listeners, in Ireland, if, and it's a big if, you're convicted of murder, you get this sort of a strangely titled life sentence. It's mandatory. Life means a 7-year minimum prison sentence. In other words, after 7 years, your sentence is reviewed and subsequently every 3 years. Now, do people get out after 7 years after being convicted of murder? Not anymore. In the late 70s, early 80s, the average sentence served by murderers was 9 years. That's thankfully changed. It's hovering somewhere around 15, 16, 17, but there's no transparency. More importantly, most people that are charged with murder initially, a lot of them will be dropped to manslaughter. And manslaughter is an open playing field in Ireland, as it is in South Africa. So, for example, a typical manslaughter sentence might be 6.5, 7 years. Take off 20%, automatic remission. It does not have to be served. And you're talking about 4 to 5 years in prison for what is essentially a murder, but evidentially could not get across the line. But we must accept the legal outcome. But in reality, the family know, in fact, all the elements of effectively a full-blown murder were there. That's hard for families. That's not only are you forgotten twice, but you're then punished by the criminal justice system who says your loved one's life wasn't worth a fig. It's not worth anything. I'll just give you one last story on this, if I might. A former member of ADVIC lost 3 members of his family through homicide in one go. The ultimate court case ended up with 3 concurrent life sentences. So 3 7-year minimum sentences to run at the same time. He asked the question, could the court, and quite wisely asked the question, could a court please tell him which of the 2 lives were worth nothing? Was it his 2 nieces? Was it his sister? And it's mind blowing. And the excuse the courts have for this is a kind of a mindlessly optimistic term called proportionality. In other words, it's not proportionate to send a victim to prison for 140 years. Well, guess what? Or an offender. It's not proportionate to kill somebody either. So we need to get some balance back into the system. And that's what we're all about for both offender and victim.
Well, Moira, the text is lit up. I think just you sharing the story is so brave. How are you doing there? You okay?
I'm fine.
To continue?
Yeah, no, sorry.
And thank you for being, you're showing your vulnerability on live radio, because I think you've touched a nerve. Someone just texted in to say, I love the honesty with Moira. The truth is that when a loved one passes away, you don't want to hear that things will get better. You know they probably will, but it's the last thing you want to hear at the time. And there's a lot of messages of support of people thinking of you through this difficult time. What from a support point of view, because we have a mutual friend, Caroline McGuigan of Suicide to Survive, because that's how you found ADVIC was through.
No, actually it wasn't. And there's been 3 main things. I mean, I've got a wonderful group of friends in that. But I got back from Johannesburg, and for maybe a month or so, I struggled. I really didn't know what to do. Everyone said to me, go see a counselor. A counselor was the last thing I wanted to see. I didn't want to speak to someone who didn't have any idea how I felt. I didn't want that. And I asked around, and if a girlfriend of mine, Ema, found Advic online, and she gave me the phone number, and I'll never forget that Sunday morning phoning. And a lady, Joan, answered, and she said, I'll get someone to get back to you straight away. I got a phone call from Turkey, because the lady was on holiday in Turkey, and she spoke to me for an hour on the phone. And by the next day, I had a therapist, I had John on my side, I got a phone call from John, and I got booked in to see the therapist.
And this is a therapist who would be specialized in the area.
Specialized in homicide. That's it. And that's the only reason I went. And I couldn't believe that for me, whose family member was murdered outside of the country, I was getting this attention from this group. And I went to the therapist, and she's one of the most phenomenal women I've ever met, and just helped. She didn't, you know, try and talk over me. She listened to everything. She allowed me to make certain decisions. John was there for me every day. It said to me, phone me every day. The people in Advic had done the same. But through that, I stumbled really badly. I wasn't getting out of bed. I was drinking. And then I became suicidal. But I've got two phenomenal sisters who live in Australia, and I couldn't see myself doing it because they were the only things holding me here. So I phoned Caroline, and she came over for the night, and she got me through that night. And she said to me, do the RAP program. So I spoke to my therapist, and she said,
the Wellness Recovery Action Plan program, for those who don't know.
If you can get through it, great. If you can't, you can leave. And I did it, and I couldn't believe it was hard, but it helped me a certain amount. And then the other place was the Dzogchen Bera Buddhist Center down in Cork in Castletown Bay. And they have a care center, and they took me in for 5 days. And I literally spent 5 days with therapists and people just being there to support me, to cradle me and allow me to meditate and to just cry, do what I wanted to do. And then they have a bereavement course twice a year, which they don't take people till after 6 months. And they eventually accepted me in December, which I went to. And phenomenal. So between Caroline, the Buddhist Center, and then Advic, I found my feet to a certain degree. And I wouldn't have made it. I know it. I don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for them. You know, Advic, excuse me, Advic do so much for so many people in need. And no one knows them. Anytime I mention Advic, people say, what the hell's Advic? And for me, it's the only way I can pay them back for everything they've done for me. And they still support me. You know, go to board meeting, the annual general meeting.
Because there's stigma around mental health anyway. But I suspect there is even a greater stigma when it comes to, you know, being able to openly say, my brother was murdered in Johannesburg, or my niece was stabbed on, you know, whatever street. And I suspect it's because, you know, people feel that there's a shame in that. Maybe my relative was involved in criminality. You know, all this stuff is obviously stops people from reaching out.
I mean, we're poor. I mean, we're all poor on this, and it's not our fault, I suppose. It's the human condition dealing with somebody else who suffered a bereavement. But if you add in that layer of homicide, although there's one thing I will criticise us all for as a society. I'm not sure how we find such difficulty in walking in the shoes with people like Moira. Surely we're not saying that we have to actually experience it. You know, I haven't had a heart attack, but I know I don't want to have one. You know, I mean, surely to God we can walk in the shoes of people who are suffering. And you know, you're not putting yourself up as the baby Jesus by saying that. This is how humans are meant to interact with each other. But people are, I think you're right insofar as you've highlighted that there people are a bit nervous around the issue. So there'll be two camps. There'll be nobody should go to prison, and then there'll be the hang 'em camp, you know. And nobody seems to have the proper discussion somewhere in the middle, which kind of gets, because it's a bit boring. And everything is black and white now. Everything's black and white thinking. lying, isn't that right? Thank you, Mr. Trump. But everything is, it's so easy. You know, ISIS are at it, it's black and white, good, bad. They're at it in America, we're all at it. I mean, to nuance something now is to be part of some old fuddy-duddy brigade. It's almost an embarrassment. And people cannot do it about homicide. So they're either saying, I'm not interested, or hang them. Well, you know what? Neither of that's going to help us. We have to just listen to the stories of people like Moira. And can I just say about Moira's story? And there's no pecking order when homicide comes to visit, you know. And by the way, there's no pecking order in grief. You know, we're not saying it's a higher level of grief. We're saying it's a different level of grief. But certainly in my time in ADVIC, I've never met particularly personally somebody who's had to go through so many layers of it as Moira has and still come out the other side. I mean, it's to her credit, to say the least.
And of course, ADVIC is a charity, so I'm sure you'll be looking for help and donations and volunteers. And
of course.
I'm just conscious, Moira, because you've hit a nerve. Anyone listening to this who has been visited by this horrible thing in their life and is listening to this, what would you say to them in relation to just how can they navigate this difficult time in their life?
My first thing is to pick up the phone to ADVIC. That's the first thing, because they're the only people that know how you feel. I'm comfortable when I'm with the people from ADVIC because they know my story. They know how I feel. They know what it's like, so you don't feel alienated. The worst thing for me is, which I found, is when you do mention your brother was murdered, it's automatically like people think straight away, oh, he must have done something wrong. He did nothing wrong, you know, absolutely nothing wrong. So why was he assassinated? Was it a mistaken identity? You know, what was it? We'd love to know. You know, that's the worst thing, not knowing why he was taken like that. He was one of the most generous people you'd ever meet. And I'm sure we could all say that about a family member, but he genuinely, you know, was. ADVIC, they're there for that particular purpose, to help people, to, you know, be that hand to cradle you and get you through. And then to look at places like bereavement retreats, like down at the Buddhist center. You don't have to be Buddhist. You can be Catholic, you can be Muslim. It's an open place for anyone to go to, but it's a place where you feel safe and you can do what you want. It's a horrible road to travel. And I'm never, you know, the pain is as raw today as it was the day it happened. I just carry it a little bit better.
And there's an issue about the criminality point as well. I mean, ADVIC isn't concerned, to be honest, where these people have died or how they've died. Most of them are not. A typical story is a family who've said goodbye to their son at 8 o'clock at night, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, they're trying to recognise him in the morgue. This is a boy who went out for a night with a couple of friends. That is a typical story. And until you've walked in those shoes, or at least tried to, you can never have any understanding what these people go through.
As a text has come in, Moira, your bravery is outstanding. You're such an inspiration to people going through difficulties. People should remember that you can get through it with lots of support. Really, thank you for coming on the show, Moira, today.
Because
it's very fresh, and you shared it with us. And I feel very privileged that you chose to come and talk to us about it. So my thanks to Moira Lawson and of course John O'Keefe of ADVIC for highlighting this very important issue that we really need to be talking more about.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on Global Village.
Thank
now stay with us, because up next we talk to the support group Belong To. Stay with us.